I'm Keaton Fletcher, an assistant professor of industrial organizational psychology at Colorado State University, and this is Healthy Work.
Welcome back to Healthy Work. I'm excited to be joined by our next guest, and I'll just get out of the way and let you introduce yourself.
Thanks, Keaton. I'm really excited to be invited here, so thank you for chatting with me today. I'm Alice Brawley-Newland. I am an assistant professor of management for now. I actually just got my tenure decision back in December, so maybe I should start saying associate professor of management at Gettysburg College in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. I do research on the gig economy, something we'll talk about today. Essentially, people who do things like rideshare driving falls under that definition. I do a little bit of research also on very small family businesses. And overall, I'm really interested in sort of unique working populations like those. And a lot of my research also falls into sort of a methodological domain. So the project we'll talk about today actually kind of covers two of those with gig work and some methodological questions.
First of all, congratulations.
That's
Thanks. Huge and very
exciting.
This is
the first time I'm getting to say it.
Oh, well, and now you get to say it publicly. So how fun. And then I guess specifically for our podcast, we have you here talking about a recent paper that you published in Occupational Health Science on, as you mentioned, gig work. And so I would love it if you could just tell us a little bit more about that project.
Sure. And this is a project I'm really excited to talk through. I think it's got a lot of interesting implications. So this came out of some questions that I came across or would get, you know, when I was giving talks on this topic, where people would say, okay, you know, we research work and workers, and aren't most gig workers not a perfect fit with that definition? And why would we research them as organizational psychologists? Related to that, there's sort of this raging, ongoing debate about employment classification for gig workers and whether they should really fit with their current definition of independent contractors versus employees and what we typically think of as traditional workers who are kind of controlled by and protected by their organization. And so there were those two big background issues that left me wondering how much should we really be focusing on these workers and how much do these workers want or need some sort of attention in terms of these topics. So I looked in particular at financial dependence because we have a lot of research literature saying so far, theoretically, we think financial dependence is really important for gig workers to distinguish whether these workers are doing this for fun or if they're financially dependent, they need this income to make ends meet, or this is really their main job. We think that that was an important variable, but then when I looked further in the literature, it's just all over the place in terms of estimating the percentage of gig workers that are financially dependent on their gig. Some studies would use a certain survey question and say, oh, it's 3% of gig workers. If it's that small, for me as a researcher in this area, I would think, okay, maybe this isn't the best workforce to be studying as a workforce. Other studies would be totally different. They might use a different survey question or, of course, a different sample, and they would conclude that over 50% of gig workers were financially dependent. So we got really different estimates for a really important question of whether these gig workers need their income or whether they're just doing it for fun. And that has really different implications for us as researchers to think about what sort of research attention this merits. When we think about this methodologically, there's a lot of interesting features of these samples. So of course, they're using different survey items over time. Not everybody is measuring financial dependence or related variables exactly the same. So the fact that they're using different survey questions could be leading to those really different estimates. So I kind of took that all in and was thinking, okay, let's do a little experiment and let's explore what's going on with how much these survey questions are really leading to the different estimates versus other more substantial predictors, like someone's demographic characteristics, like their age, their sex, whether they have kids and how many kids. Is that what's leading to all these different estimates in whether they report being financially dependent? I also looked at the same question across two different gig workforces. So I looked at crowd workers, stuff like MTurk, Fiverr, those sorts of online platforms where someone's doing remote work that can be done on their computer. And then I looked at rideshare drivers. So let me tell you what I found. Even with the item that people were rating as the strongest worded gig dependence item, the question was, this gig is my primary source of income or my main job? And people had yes or no options. When I asked that very strongly worded item, even then, 45% of crowd workers, and it gets even higher, 74% of rideshare drivers said yes to that, that this was their primary source of income. And that was, for me, really surprising to see that the numbers were that high. Those numbers increase from 45% and 74%, they go up higher when we get to like more weekly worded questions that are maybe easier to agree with or to say yes to. As far as differences that I found, crowd workers showed really strong differences across different item wording. So those would go from 45% up to 94%. You're getting really different estimates just by changing the item wording. And then there were some demographic factors that related to saying, yes, I am financially dependent on this gig of crowd work. Being married in particular made people more likely to say, yes, they were financially dependent on crowd work, and also working more hours on the gig and fewer hours off the gig. Maybe we're not so surprised by those, but those were related to being more likely to say yes, they were financially dependent on crowd work. For rideshare drivers, item wording also really made a difference, but not as big of a difference. That range of percentages of financially dependent rideshare drivers differed. It went from 74% up to 91%. So not as big of a difference just based on item wording, but still a significant difference across just different item wording, and giving you different estimates of the percentage of financially dependent gig workers. For rideshare drivers, being married showed up again as a significant predictor. Tenure on the platform and hours worked on the platform was a significant predictor of whether people said, yes, I'm financially dependent on this gig. And being younger significantly predicted that. So some of those match up with past research on financial dependence, like the result for age. Some are totally the opposite, like being married, usually that's related to less financial dependence. So that was surprising. And I'll just throw out there, there were a couple of things that we would have typically seen as significant predictors of saying, yes, I'm financially dependent on this gig, that weren't here, like education or having kids. That didn't make a difference in someone's level of financial dependence on the gig, at least with these two samples.
One, that's a lot. So thank you so much for such a comprehensive understanding of what's going on here. I am also shocked that the kids part wasn't significant, because when you were talking about the married couples, I was like, well, yeah, we went through COVID where a lot of people left the workforce, particularly women, particularly mothers. Mm. And so I would expect, right, that having children and being married, you know, would make you dependent on this gig work, because you can sort of keep that up even though you're not fully employed and it can work around kids. But that part is kind of surprising to me. And just, I think the finding that so many people are dependent on this kind of work financially, and regardless of how you're wording it, when you talked about the strongest worded version, I think that's really impactful to say, like, okay, if we're being very conservative in our decision making here of we're only going to include people that view this as their primary source of income, the numbers are still really high. And I think our discourse around that, at least in popular culture or like around the dinner table, isn't necessarily reflecting that. And, you know, you inherently, I think, touched on that in your setup for the problem. And so, I don't know. Wow. Thank you so much. There's so much to unpack here. I guess you hinted at it a little bit, but I'm curious what surprised you the most. And, you know, if you've got thoughts about why you're finding some surprising things, I'd love to hear those.
Yeah, I mean, so you're hitting the nail on the head as far as what surprised me the most. The sheer numbers, honestly, I was not expecting the numbers to be so high, especially for something like we're asking, is this your main job? Is this your primary source of income? And that's where we're getting 45% of crowd workers, 74% of rideshare drivers. And the numbers only go up from there. Like if we ask, are you using this gig to make ends meet, to pay bills? It goes up to 75 and 81% across the two samples. Or considering the gig income important or essential, it's not necessarily your primary job, but it's still important. And those numbers go up to 85 and 88%. So it really is the vast majority that are showing up as financially dependent on the gig. I think this has a lot of implications for policy and how we think about gig work, and even just thinking about it like as a social norm now, people in my experience still tend to describe it as like something people are choosing or something they're doing to make extra cash, but not to make ends meet. But the data is really just not reflecting that. This is not what I wanted to be the case by any means, but I think, you know, knowing some of the things that we know about gig work being sort of a tough reality and a tougher job than it maybe seems at first, it's especially surprising and alarming maybe to see those results. The other thing I found really surprising, the marital status results, what is up with that? You have more family members to support. So maybe it makes sense from that perspective. But we would also tend to think, at least in traditional work settings, people who are married to someone else probably can also rely in part on another income. So maybe there's some surprising, like, social contrast going on there. And then one other thing I noticed is men, male rideshare drivers, reported higher levels of financial dependence than female rideshare drivers. And that's another one where we look at traditional jobs, we typically see women reporting higher financial stress, higher financial dependence in some settings, but it was the total reverse in rideshare, which is, I think, especially interesting when we consider that rideshare driving tends to be male dominated and men tend to earn more.
That is so interesting. And, you know, as you explain it, I guess it makes sense, right? Because if we think about rideshare in particular, this gig work version of ridesharing sort of edged out traditional taxi style services. I mean, that's still a service that people need. And so the people who are traditionally employed in these taxi style services were men who are the primary breadwinners in many instances of their families. And so now they're going to just transfer that, do the same job, but in this gig work format. To that point then about the structure of work being different, normally I ask people, if I were a manager, what would I do? But given that this is gig work, what should I do as either a gig worker or someone who loves a gig worker or just a random person? What can I do with this?
Well, it's a great question. I like how you're framing it of thinking like the work itself is different anyway, and we don't have management in a traditional sense, you know, even there are legal limitations on that with gig workers and independent contractors. Some of the things I would suggest people thinking about, and this can kind of cut across different audiences maybe, one is that big overall takeaway of like knowing that economic dependence is actually the norm among gig workers. It seems to be the case rather than the exception, especially among rideshare drivers, where instead of people doing this just for fun, it seems like the biggest majority is people doing this because they really need that income, or it might even be their only source of income. That could be really important when we're thinking about something like these employment classification debates, like do gig workers fit as employees versus independent contractors? And I think we in the US and some other countries have this two-option system that doesn't allow for a range of possibilities. So I don't think there's going to be any one fit for every single gig worker. I don't think 100% of gig workers are ever going to agree that they want to be contractors or employees. But if we're trying to go with a majority fit, at least this data is saying like the majority of gig workers are economically dependent on this, and maybe it isn't the best fit to treat them all as independent contractors. For people who are working with gig workers, then, like if you're doing some sort of survey, if you are working with this population in other ways, I would keep that in mind, you know, in terms of how you're compensating people or even just how you're framing questions or framing decision making around gig workers. I did find that hours worked either on or off platform, depending on if we're talking about crowd workers or rideshare drivers, hours worked was a pretty good predictor of whether people said they were financially dependent on the gig. And so that's a nice one because it's really easy to measure hours worked. We can ask people to report that. Maybe we track it on the app. I will say it is a point of contention in gig work in terms of measuring hours worked. Like some parties want to measure hours spent waiting or time spent waiting for a ride versus some other parties want to just measure time spent like providing a ride. And you get a very different estimate of hours there. As far as looking into hours as an index of financial dependence, we also might want to consider that working certain hours can be a lot more beneficial financially for workers compared to other hours. Like if you're working the evening or you're working whatever time people are requesting rides, then you're going to potentially make a lot more off of gig work at those times, as opposed to just by the sheer fact that you're working more hours, it may or may not be the profitable hours. I think there's also a message in here of adjusting our expectations in terms of who we might typically expect to be the most financially stressed or financially dependent gig workers, like looking at male and married gig workers. We don't know for sure what the reason is just based on these results so far, but why are those workers reporting higher financial dependence than our single gig workers or female gig workers? Or adjusting our expectations around education. Education didn't matter at all for financial dependence, which maybe there's a good message in there, but I also think a bigger picture thought that I take from that is that We need to look more at like platform specific reputation. Those 5-star ratings matter a whole lot more than your education level that you're bringing into gig work, which maybe that's a good message. Maybe it's a scary message, but I think it's a something that we need to be thinking about and adjusting how we think about education as a way into a particular type of work. And then one other thing I noticed is that those slight differences in some of the results, it seems to be the case that for crowd work, demographic factors matter less. Like being male or female wasn't a significant difference between crowd workers. It was just for rideshare drivers. So maybe there's something to explore there, to be thinking about there in terms of how some gig platforms might make it easier to be successful regardless of personal characteristics. And my guess is that it's those remote platforms where no one is interacting in person, and you don't necessarily know if the person you're talking to is a man or a woman or any other demographic group just based on that remote interaction, versus something like rideshare driving, you can make a guess of the person's gender, their age, any other demographic characteristic. And so there's probably some big differences between in-person and remote work, and maybe we can keep that in mind going forward for research or as policymakers or people going into or considering going into this type of work. And I have one last thing, and that would be to word your questions carefully. If you're making any kind of research or policy decision based on the conclusions of what percent said yes to a survey question like this, word it exactly like you mean. If you want to know, are people doing this to make ends meet, you might get a fundamentally different percentage in your estimate of the percent who are making ends meet versus the percent who are treating this as their only job or their main source of income. So being really careful with question wording is always in the back of our minds, but I think it's especially important here where we're seeing you get very different estimates just based on some kind of subtle wording differences in those survey questions.
All really good points. And to the last one, I think about, you know, scientific literacy as a consumer of information. When we're seeing reports come out on, you know, Instagram posts or in the traditional media like newspapers, evaluating what question they use, because obviously, I mean, just the percentages change so vastly, they really aren't interchangeable questions. And so having to be a little bit more informed and do a little bit more work and read past the headline, because I'm sure that you could take these percentages and all say X percentage is financially dependent, but that conclusion, that number in the headline is going to really depend on that question. And as consumers of the information, it's important to know that it varies a lot depending just on that slight wording. Well, my biggest and favorite question for you is, why do you do this work?
Why do I do this work? I really have been motivated over the years to pay attention to some of these sort of non-traditional or contingent workforces. Those are not new. We have had contingent workers for a long time. We've had contractors, but it's something that our research over time has paid a little more attention to, but I would like to keep doing that and promote that so that we have a science of work that really applies to all workers. Like your podcast being focused on healthy work, like I don't want it to just be limited to people working in a traditional job. And I'd like to expand beyond those sort of boundaries. And for gig workers in particular, this has helped me kind of make that decision of like, should I/we keep working to look at gig work? Is this something that merits more research attention? And how big of a deal is the work to these workers? Is, again, is it something for fun or because they really need the income? And if they're doing fine without us, great. But if they're potentially vulnerable, is there something that we can do with what we know about work to improve upon that experience?
Well, thank you so much for doing the great work and expanding our scientific understanding of what it means to work. I fully agree, right, that you know, work doesn't look the way that we traditionally think it does, like in the office for everyone. And we need work like yours to understand it. And thank you again so much for your time and for helping us understand what it is that you found in this paper.
Yeah, bye. Thank you so much, Keaton.
Thanks, bye.
Healthy Work is a podcast written and produced by Keaton Fletcher and Mariana Arvon, mixed and edited by Keaton Fletcher, artwork by Keaton Fletcher, and our music is Zero Microsong by Steve Combs. Please like us, follow us, and subscribe on whatever podcatching software you use, and leave a review in the iTunes store. It really does help get us out there.